Good morning and welcome to the Weldon Green podcast. Today I'm going to bring you a new episode of the Ask Weldon Show. You can check the show out live every day, 6:30 p.m. at twitch.tv/mindgamesweldon. And remember that everything in the Mind Games brand is supported by the Mac program, mindgames.gg/MAC. And you guys should use the code podcast as you're listening to the audio version of the show rather than the code that I share during the video. All right, let's hop into it. Good morning, YouTube, and welcome to the Ask Weldon Show, episode 234. Today, we're going to talk about when is it time to quit gaming? That's the last question of the show. And it's not really put that way. It's put a little bit of a different way, but that's kind of the crux of the question, I think, or at least that's how I saw it. So welcome. Welcome to the show. This is the Ask Weldon Show. I am Weldon, and this is the show where you ask me questions, and I answer them from my perspective as a sports psychology trainer, or as an esport coach, or as a League of Legends coach, or in whatever capacity that I can answer your question. Feel free to ask anything that you like. If I can't answer it, I'll just come on air and apologize and say, not really my cup of tea. But I will kind of share my insider experience, and or I'll just filter it out. Which I've only had to do with one question, actually. Pretty much everybody is asking great questions, so if you're afraid, don't be. You can ask a question by going to anchor.fm/WeldonGreen, anchor.fm, download the app, /WeldonGreen. I'm not sponsored by this app or anything. It's just the easiest and best way to handle getting a bunch of questions in an audio format and keeping them organized and playing them on stream when I'm answering them. So it's super, super convenient and great. And they have like an online web interface for me to see all of your questions. Shows your name, shows, you know, the question thing that you type in. It's awesome. So anyway, get the Anchor app, anchor.fm/WeldonGreen. Go to my profile, click the little audio message button. You hold up the phone. It makes your voice sound radio-esque, like they do something with the audio tuning, I think, to make you sound better than the cheap phone microphone that you have in your phone. It's pretty amazing, actually. Okay. Yeah, that's it for any sort of announcements. There's nothing special. There is something special that happened. Yesterday, after the show, after the stream, I got a knock on my window. And I looked over, and there was a drunk dude standing outside asking to use a phone charging cable. So this is a little weird because I live in an out of the way street from the downtown. And even though the Neste rally is happening in town right now, he said he wasn't a part of that and he wasn't in town for that. He's just kind of like drunk and out at 6 a.m. in the morning. He was finishing his night, I'll put it that way. So he just sat there and I stuck the phone cable out the window and he charged his phone for 20 minutes, asked for a drink of water, and then kind of barely made it stumbling out of my front yard without falling flat on his face. That was entertaining. It was, he was really smelly too. I could smell him through the window. And he was dressed pretty nice. Just reeked of alcohol. Anyway, let's jump into the show, shall we? All right, the first question is from Sam.
Hey, Weldon. Sam, aka Just Casual here, coming from Wisconsin, with another question. You talk a lot about limiting training time for people if they actually want to get better at the game, right? And we've heard success stories on previous podcasts where people actually have cut the number of games that they grind and spend more time learning about the game or looking at replays. Now, when we talk about the pro scene, how does that advice move over to them? Is it different? Is it the same? Because I'm wondering, with the pro player's schedule when it comes to training, they're grinding out a lot of hours, and I understand that's necessary. But is there a way to actually limit their training time and make it more efficient and successful? Or is this just a different beast that you have to tackle? Love to know your thoughts. Thanks.
All right, Sam, thanks for the question. So there's a couple different factors that play into training time for pros. The most natural way to limit training time is through injury. So essentially, if you look at traditional sport, most sports train up to the point where injury is common, and then they stop. Because you want to get the best that you can possibly be so that you can be better than everybody else, But you don't want to be injured because then you can't play anymore. And so all sports naturally tend to that injury rate. And that's basically what keeps it in check. Now, that kind of thing isn't necessary for sports like pool. It's not. I don't know if that's really a sport, whatever, games like pool, where, okay, it's a pretty low injury rate. So technically, you could train it all day long. People do. They play pool for hours. You know, they play pool long periods of time. But at some point, you get diminishing returns because your skill level can't get that much better with training, and you've already kind of mastered it, so you're just kind of honing it, and then you keep it much better, right? You don't wake up one day after playing pool so much and not be able to play pool, and you don't need to be in shape aerobically for it, and your technique doesn't degrade as much when you don't train, and so it's easier to sustain that with like a more minimal investment. So that's something that the patching and the changing of the game in esports typically ruins for esport athletes. So like, they could, once they hit a certain level, sustain their level with less training, but unfortunately, because the game keeps changing, they can't. So the injury thing is out the window, and the sustaining a skill level with less investment is out the window. And the real problem then is that coaches, there's not a lot of good coaching in esport, and so coaches can't optimize the environment very well. So there's not a good way of getting the most amount of training in the least amount of time. For example, if you could, there's always not exponential, but asymptotic, I think, asymptotic approach to training, where like the time that you invest at the beginning is very powerful for your learning, and the time that you invest towards the end gets less, you learn less and less for the amount of time. So you spend 1 hour and you learn a bunch, and then you spend an hour and you learn some, and you spend an hour and you learn a little, and you spend an hour and you learn barely anything, and then you start improving very little amounts for an hour, right? But like, there's still amounts, right? But if you could, for example, take the 5 hours and you could learn the same amount in 3 hours because your training is more optimal, then you would hit that asymptotic top, like the limit of training, you would theorize much sooner, where like more training is useful, but not enough useful compared to sleep or a hobby, you know, or something else that just relaxes you, right? Because it doesn't make you that much better. It makes you better, but like not enough to matter on a Saturday during the game. So unfortunately, two things collude to make that hard. One, crappy coaching. So there's just a ton of like useless coaches all around esport. Who can't really help players to optimize their training in a team environment. And then two, the lack of training tools. So unlike being able to run very efficient, hyper-focused drills that target a specific area of expertise, in League of Legends and in many other esports, you simply just play the game over and over again, which means that you might encounter 700, or let's do it a percentage, right? You might encounter 90% of the game, things that you already can do just fine. So you're just repeating them uselessly, and then 10% of things that you can't do that you're trying to learn. So for example, in Overwatch, you spawn at the spawn. Congratulations, you already know how to do that. You walk from the spawn to the point. Congratulations, you already know how to do that. You're practicing nothing, right? Then you get there and you shoot a couple shots at somebody. Congratulations, you're probably already pretty decent at that. And then, you know, some play happens and you get to practice during that play for a couple seconds before you die. You're like, oh, that was a couple seconds of learning a new thing, and now I got to go back and do 17 seconds of things I already know how to do so that I can get back to another 2 seconds of practicing something I don't know how to do. So that's incredibly inefficient, and people in traditional sport would laugh if that's how they had to train, because it's ridiculous. You know, they do, you know, 35 minutes of a focused drill where they have a failure rate of like 90%. And every single attempt is a failure, and then the last 10 times they do the drill, maybe they succeed one or two times. That is like the bleeding edge of what they're capable of, right? So, yeah, so training techniques suck. All right, so then the question is, well, why is it better for amateur players to limit training time, but for pro players, they're trying to maximize training time? Because the goal is to maximize, well, okay, not every person is going to go pro. And so there's a question, are you trying to become the best of all time, or are you trying to become the best version of yourself? And most people don't have the guts to try to go to become the best of all time. They won't admit that to themselves. But the amount of sacrifice that it takes and the amount of clear-cut visual ambition that you have to have for yourself is absurd. And a lot of people in esport aren't in a space where they can imagine that they want to be like the LeBron James of esport or whatever. So instead, they're thinking like, I want to be the best version of myself. And if that happens to be good enough to be pro, cool, right? So they're trying to maximize themselves. And they usually suck. They're usually good. Most people are usually really good at spamming games and really bad at optimizing their training. So what they accomplish in 4 hours could be accomplished in 2 hours. And that's the skill that everybody needs to learn before they go pro, even while they're pro. However, once you are a pro, generally speaking, you're not going to be able to limit your training time as much because you have required scrims. And then you're going to have a lot more like skill building and resources to optimize your training time regardless. Also, you have to win. Like, it's your job, right? And so there's no space for spending a few weeks kind of like picking up a new skill, which is why I recommend so much that people do this before they ever try to go pro, because this is the time when you can work on learning how to optimize your training and learning how to train better and train smarter instead of training more. Because it takes experimentation, it takes figuring it out, it takes trying things and all this sort of stuff. And you don't have that much time to do that when you're a pro. You have to like do that on top of training a ton of games, which is even harder because you have to win, right? So you have to train tons and tons of games as much as you can, because you're always going to be learning. Every game you play, you're going to be improving. It's just a question of how little improvement is it, you know? Maybe it's only an inch. It's an inch more than you were before the game, but like it's not enough to matter between you and winning, unfortunately, for a lot of people. So those are the challenges facing this question and whether or not pros and amateurs should kind of train the same, and is there a way to limit training time for pros? And the answer, the solution, is a combination of things. One, improving the coach environment. Improving coach selection. So you get more talented coaches that are better at optimizing training for teams. Working with publishers to create training tools so that more things can be learned in less time. So that that limit of training time is asymptotically approached like rapidly. And then essentially trying to show statistically where that limit exists. So you show like, okay, here's the wide variety of training time among athletes. Here's their relative skill levels. This is about the training. This is about the time that training seems to taper off. So this is our official recommendation for how much you should train versus how much you should do other stuff in your life. And doing that kind of like statistical grunt work to find out where the real kind of like performance peak is hit, and where it's called parsimony, which is the state where like other variables have little impact on the solution or on the answer to the algorithm. I think in machine learning. So essentially we would say, this is the moment of parsimony where more training does not really equate to more winning. It equates to slightly more skill, but not enough skill to actually matter, even though the perception of the skill increases is there. So, yeah, I think that those are the only forces in the world that could operate to limit pro playing time. Because there is talk in the lawyer community about, oh, we're going to have a, you know, we're going to have a player union and we're going to limit training time with the player union, which is total, this is like a joke, right? Okay, you're telling me that you're going to go to, you know, the top 40 players in the world who fought their butts off to become professional players, and you're going to officially publisher side limit their team's training time so they are not allowed to be required to train any more than that. And then and then they're going to not train, and the people just below them, you know, skill level 41 through 100, are going to train all that they want, and they're going to get better than those other people, obviously, because they're training more, and they're going to knock them out of their spot and take their spot as a pro. Like, that's never going to happen. Pros are going to train as much as they can to stay at the top. And no force on earth is going to stop that unless it is related to how much they learn in a training session. So, yeah. Hopefully, publishers open their eyes and start to develop tools for pro players to train better. That would be the largest impact on training time for pro esport athletes, unfortunately. Until then, not much is going to change. All right, let's look at question number two. This question is from Gabriel.
Hello, Walden. Today I have a question concerning comfort in your brain, like looking for distractions. I play Overwatch, a game that requires a lot of, you know, reflexes and also positioning it, so it's kind of both. So, when I play Overwatch, my brain looks for distractions, like why I'm doing bad, to justify why I'm doing bad. Either my sense is bad, my FPS is laggy, my chair position's bad, so I'm not in a good posture, so I can't move my mouse as fast, or my eye position's bad. So I just want to know if there's any way to stop that and just to focus on the game so I can improve. I did finish UMAC program, and I do try centering, so any help would be appreciated. Thank you. Well done.
Okay. First of all, thank you for the question. Whoa. And I'm very excited that you have tried the MAC program. For those of you who don't know what he's talking about, I'll plug that real quick. The MAC program is the Mindfulness Acceptance Commitment training program that I have online. It's like right now it's 50 online videos with a lecture and a mindfulness, seated mindfulness training included in it, right? So 10 to 20 minute lecture with over slides plus a mindfulness training session that goes in kind of a cyclical manner, treating these three topics, mindfulness, acceptance, commitment, in an effort to build mental resilience. It's a mindfulness-based performance enhancement program from traditional sport, which I adapted into an online tool and then recorded the videos that I do. And I usually do this with pro teams live, but for you guys, it would be videos on the internet. Now I'm making an app out of it. So there's going to be an app in a couple months, hopefully. And everybody who owns the program, of course, gets into the app beta. So don't feel like you need to wait for the app to buy. If you're interested now, you can check it out and still get that grandfathered in for free. The URL is mindgames.gg/MAC, and the code you should use for your discount is AskWeldon. Use that code to show that you're coming from this video, essentially, so that I know kind of where the traffic comes from, who are interested, most interested in the program. All right, so back to the question. Physical distractions can be seen as kind of like a natural part of competing in sport and associated with high body awareness. The most important thing with physical distractions is that you do not see them, is not that you do not notice them. It's that you don't see them as an excuse. So I would say, Gabriel, that it's really normal as you improve your level of mindfulness to have better body awareness, and it's more normal to notice distractions and to notice your physical body and the shape of your physical body and the things that your physical body is doing or experiencing or sensing in some way. Touch, sight, sound, taste, smell, right? The main thing is to not let your mind become fixated on these things, to not allow it to become stuck on a particular sense, but to flow or shift itself to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and back to the game over and over again, which is why it's called flow state. This happens also in flow state naturally, and we're trying to make this happen in flow state kind of manually as well. So for you, I would say pay attention to how your mind fixates on things, and your work is to kind of like always calmly forgive yourself for that emotional attachment and to decenter yourself and move back into a focus on obviously the present moment, which means that your senses are ongoing again, right? So if it's still an irritation, like for example, you still, your mouse is still out of position in the present and it was a couple of seconds ago too, then you notice it again, right? Which is fine. So that's the first key, is to make sure that you're always continuing to monitor it, that you're not attached to pain that you felt in your posture a couple seconds ago, but rather that you're attached to pain in your posture right now, right in this moment, and paying attention as it changes. Because you're going to start to notice fluctuations. Like at first your mouse is a little distracting, and then it's very distracting, and then it's less distracting, and then it's very, there's going to be these pulses, right? So it's good to stay in tune with the attention of that kind of pulse and feel it as it kind of goes along, so that you realize it's not just a static thing. Okay, the second most important thing is to not give in to them, right? Is to not take action for them. Now, this is harder depending on how your brain is wired up. Obviously, for people with Tourette syndrome, this is the maximum level of difficulty, right? Because there's this, literally this charge that builds up in the brain that is only relieved when the action is released. And that's kind of like, it sounds like what's going on there, right? So you have, of course, nobody's brains are, don't fall into like one category and the other category. Everything's on a spectrum, right? And so, you know, if people have nervous tics, you could say like, okay, well, that's kind of like the same direction, essentially, as trying to, you know, as you have this impulse that you have to do and you're not satiated until you solve it. So it goes all the way back down to people who like have zero issue with impulse control. And they don't need to ever satiate their brain for these kind of impulses. But that's not as common as you'd think. So anyway, the most important thing is that to not ever give into it and to just and not move and not just to pay attention to it as it's happening, right? Just to pay attention to the need, but not to give in to the need, to and not necessarily to fight it, but just to, I would say in a way, approach it with gentle curiosity and forgiveness and just pay attention to the changing, like a scientist with a completely unemotional mind, observing yourself go through these contortions, essentially of denial. And then it will pretty much fade away. You have to kind of master one, then you master the second, you master the third, and it slowly fades. And that open curiosity and kind of like objective mind where you're non-emotional as you're watching yourself go through the emotion, I think is a key step. So that's the real answer. That's like the fundamental, I would say, movement that I would say your brain needs to go through. But there's a bunch of hacks that you can use if that's difficult. I think you can choose one to target. So you can say, I'll never ever fix my mouse or my posture or my chair, but like other things, I'll just deal with them quickly and move on so that I can, whoops, hit my mic there, so that I can focus on just this one thing, one area of denial. You can do rewards or punishments where you, if you don't do anything, you know, you get some sort of reward if you don't do something mean to yourself, like this funny one that I heard Tim Ferriss say was he took a picture of himself in whitey tidy underwear, like a very unflattering kind of fat tummy picture, and he sent it to a friend and he was like, if I don't do my diet, put this out on the internet. You know, put it on my Instagram. Here's my Instagram password. So you can like put up a stopgap there that will like punish you if you break the rules or something. You have to design this yourself because obviously I don't know how you would coordinate this in your life. But there's a bunch of little hacks you can do to kind of give yourself a little freedom in tackling these kinds of distractions, physical distractions. I hope that something that I recommended was useful to you, and thanks for your call-in. Remember to check out the Mac program. I'll mention that again before I go to the last question. mindgames.gg/MAC. Code Ask Weldon. And thanks again for bringing that up. in your question, and I hope that it was useful for addressing this problem. I hope that your mental resilience from this program allows you to kind of tackle that denial. Okay, final question.
Hey, Weldon. I really want to get better at meeting new people, building my social circle, and making some meaningful friendships. I love gaming, particularly role-playing games, but whenever I go out somewhere and meet people, I find that people have a hard time relating to this kind of thing if they don't have any experience with it. I feel like I need to invest in some new hobbies and interests in order to make it easier to connect with people in the real world, but I can't see myself having the time to do that and also playing video games. Gaming is a passion of mine, but is it just not serving my interests anymore? Should I let it go? Would love your advice. Thank you.
All right, John. As always, it's a pleasure to take your questions. Everybody here on the show adores your voice and appreciates the way that you phrase your insights, questions, and inquiries. Okay, so the answer is that you should be able to do both. I know that there's a perceived lack of time, but I think that if you actually come down to it, it's really possible. Excuse me. It's really possible to have a lot of like other hobbies and other interests that you can use to parlay into friendships. So just, you know, I mean, just as a proof of concept, and as an example, I basically never really had any friends in gaming at all, unfortunately, mostly because I could never find other friends who were gamers because this was pre-internet when I was growing up, right? But I played video games for anywhere from 2 to 4 hours a day for my entire life up to age 30. But all of my friendships occurred in other venues, right? Either in sport, where I would, you know, do anywhere from 2 to 6 hours of sport a day, pretty much for 21 years straight. I would say, with breaks in there. When I was in high school, I switched from swimming year-round to doing 3 different sports year-round. So then, obviously, I didn't have a winter sport. I just had a summer and a spring sport and a fall sport. So there was a lot of like sport-based friendships. I did hunting and bow tech and bow hunting hobbies, which a lot of music, right? So I had a lot of friends in band. Played the trumpet, did singing. After I kind of like left school, I think that my hobbies declined a little bit, but then I expanded them out. So language learning, like camping, hiking, traveling, mostly language learning, I think. Now marketing and doing business type stuff. I think that if you put the attention or the intention into like really finding a wide variety, like something to do every single weekend, like say like, okay, I'm going to do something every single Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evening for the next 3 months, period. And you search out a whole bunch of interesting things that you could do for the first time, you will find that it doesn't really impinge on your gaming time all that much, that you're still able to sustain a high levels and high amounts of video game play and maybe even role-playing. You know, if you're talking about the role-playing where you get together with a bunch of friends, that kind of role-playing is all eminently possible with other hobbies. It's just that most people don't want to contract their time. We like to expand things out into the amount of time that we have available, and then we feel like that amount of time is necessary to accomplish all of that. But if I think about my college days when I was able to do studies, work, relationships, homework, and hobbies as well, and kind of manage to fit them all in quite easily, it's really a matter of scheduling and of like time pressure, right? And by time pressure, I mean like the feeling that it won't all fit in a single day, and you have to move things off to another day here or there, or that you get a contracted amount of time. Instead of 5 hours to relax and do this, you have to try hard to accomplish it in 3, which involves a little bit of like annoying effort that you don't want to give, because if you just release it, you have the 5 hours, then it's easier to stomach. So I believe that there's this time pressure thing, but I think that one thing I figured out when I had kids was a lot of that is fallacious. It's like not real. It's just perception, because you can actually do plenty of stuff in the day. It just feels like they're packed full, but really they aren't. And I know that now, because I still do the same amount of stuff or more as I did before in a day, but I also take care of kids and try to take care of a household all day long too. Or at least for large swaths of the day, you know, like bedtimes and stuff like that. So yeah, my answer is gaming does make it harder to make in IRL friends, that you do need hobbies, and that it is possible to maintain a whole bunch of hobbies that are not related to gaming, and to have those kind of groups of people not really intersect. Like, I don't think that most people that I knew or associated with or was friends with ever knew that I played video games all the time. It's only since esports started, and I'm talking about it all the time to my friends, that everybody realized, oh, he's that gamer guy. Yeah, before then I was just, you know, Weldon, who kind of swam a lot, did language learning stuff, liked to hunt, liked to hike and camp, climb mountains, I guess. That's kind of, I think, what my identity was to the people who knew me, who weren't really invested in what it was that I did from 10 p.m. to midnight every single night, essentially. So yeah, I think you're on the right track, and I don't think that you need to give up gaming to do it, and I think that you can fit it all in if you try. So go for it. Just pick a hobby, force yourself to do it. Do it for a while, pick another one, force yourself to do it. Do something that you are interested in so that you have motivation for it, and do something that is group-based. You know, if you're doing language learning, go to language talking groups. That's what I did for years in Japan. We go to these language talking groups, had a lot of good friendships there. I can't ramble on any more about this question, so I'm going to call it quits. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning into the show today. Thank you for the callers. Make sure to check out the Mac program and subscribe to this YouTube channel so that you get new videos every single day of the show. Or you can come check them out live, 7:30 p.m. California time, every single day that I can make it, on the popular streaming website with the purple logo, /MindGamesWeldon. I can't say the word of that popular streaming website, because the last time I did, YouTube scanned my video and demonetized it for saying it. That's the show for you today. I hope that you guys enjoyed it. Remember, you can check out the show live at twitch.tv/MindGamesWeldon every day, 6:30 p.m. And you can join the pre- and post-show chat, where I answer questions from the audience in depth. We can kind of dig into them deeper because you're there to respond. And make sure that if you check out the Mac program, mindgames.gg/MAC, that you guys use the code PODCAST. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.